Welcome to the PGPC podcast. My name is Jared Kieber, we're going to jump in today. As always, we're based out of Prince George Pentecostal Church. Encourage you to visit our website, PrinceGeorgePentecostalChurch.com. If you have any questions or topics that you'd like to hear discussed, there's a form on there that you can fill out, and we'll have a look at that and consider answering or discussing topics that you would send in. You don't have to be a member of the local church here to do that. Feel free in those things. So what would you say if somebody asked you, how do you know God exists? Or maybe you're a skeptic, you're listening, you're thinking God doesn't exist, there's no way that you could even have a good argument for that. I think one of the things that a lot of Christians are bad for is the fact that we maybe don't always know why we believe what we believe, and the truth is that we maybe don't even have a grounding in that at all. So if you talk to Christians anyways, a lot of them will appeal to their personal experience, and that's good. There's power in story. There is a power in experience, and someone can't say to you, well, no, you didn't have that experience. And there are a lot of people with really really powerful stories. But when you get down to the meat and bones of it, there are a lot of people from a lot of different walks of life who would claim to have experiences that give them authority. So what's kind of more of a different way of approach? What sets Christianity apart from anyone else that's claiming that they've kind of know what's going on, or maybe they're based off of personal experience, claiming some form of authority, essentially, and this is the way that the world works. How would you answer that question if you're a Christian? Have you ever thought about it? I hope that you have, but like I said, not but a few minutes ago, we oftentimes don't think about those things. I'm used to preaching. Usually I do that in the morning, today on this episode, that's what I want to discuss. How do you know that God exists? How do I know that God exists? Are there good reasons for believing those things? And this afternoon, it's actually 12:26 right now as I am speaking. Just talk about some historical things that Christians believed and leaned on in regards to why does God exist, and bring it around to, I think we have really good reason to believe that the God of the Bible actually exists. So what are those reasons? Well, I'd like to start from a place of complete skepticism. Our culture's interesting because naturalism, or the idea that everything's come about by natural causes, kind of seems to rule a lot of the sciences, and yet you'll get a lot of people who pick and choose kind of worldviews based on what they like. If you go to a university setting, your science students oftentimes will be very naturalistic or atheistic, and maybe your students in the arts will be picking and choosing, borrow a little bit from Buddhism, borrow a little bit from, Christianity, borrow a little bit from wherever, right? And it's kind of a postmodern idea of I'll pick and choose whatever fits me. But what I want to start from is kind of that atheistic, naturalistic standpoint, and then we'll work towards how we would answer as Christians those who kind of pick and choose, or those who hold to other religions. What sets Christianity apart from Islam? So we'll kind of work through that, starting with naturalism. So if you were to go into a classroom in an elementary school, a high school, university, and you were to dig into cosmology, I know that's not kind of how you say it in elementary school or a high school, but the study of the universe and its existence, you would find that current scientific theory holds that the universe began to exist at a point in history, at the Big Bang. And the Big Bang kind of states that the universe began to exist. All that is, all of matter, we trace back to the Big Bang. And the reason we say that is the universe is expanding. And so that kind of points to a start. And for the most part, it would seem within the scientific community that is what's accepted for the beginning of the universe. Now, whether you buy into that or not, the Big Bang Theory, I know in Christian circles, has been something that is a topic of debate, and you'll get into, you know, was in Genesis, were we looking at a literal six-day creation or longer, and that's a conversation for another day. But if you just assume that this is right, you know, what current scientific theory holds about the origins of the universe is correct, that everything began to exist at a certain point in history at the Big Bang, I think that actually works as an argument for the existence of God. And the reason that I think that, and this isn't me coming up with something because I'm a genius, but this is actually something that's been argued for quite some time. It's called the cosmological argument, the Kalam cosmological argument. But if you get into logic, that which begins to exist has a cause for its existence. When you look at current scientific theory, the universe began to exist. Therefore, the universe has to have a cause for its existence. And you'll hear, you know, kind of Christian apologeticists or people who argue for the existence of God, they'll use this argument quite often. William Lane Craig, I've heard, use this argument tons of times. But it's a very strong argument. If something begins to exist, it has to have a cause for its existence. And in this case, current scientific theory tells us the universe began to exist. It's got to have a cause for its existence outside of itself. And that actually lines up with a theistic, or someone who believes in God, that lines up with a theistic worldview, that there is a God who is outside of the physical universe that created the physical universe. If you don't believe that, I don't know what you do with the origins of the universe, because at some point, everything started. How do you explain that if there's not a cause for it outside of itself? And there are arguments that will be made in, you know, expanding and decreasing isn't the right word. You know, the universe is constantly expanding and shrinking over time, and it just keeps going. But the problem is that you eventually get back to the point that even in that scenario, it had to start somewhere. Right? So the cosmological argument, in my mind, is a very good logical way of saying we have good reason to believe that something outside of the physical universe caused the physical universe. You know, and you could actually watch, it was with Ben Stein, I don't even remember what it was called, but they kind of make this argument. Expelled was the movie. I mean, take it for what it is, but there's some good working out of the cosmological argument in that, and is worth a watch. Second reason that I think we have good reason to believe that there is a God that exists is what we call the axiological or the moral argument. In my fourth year of Bible college, I took a class called Philosophy, Introduction to a Christian Worldview. And we talked about the axiological argument quite a bit in that class, and I know that's a big word. I know cosmological argument is a big word. Try and explain these as we go along. It's just the moral argument. We have moral compasses. Every person that we would agree is functioning as a somewhat normal human being has a moral compass. The people who don't, we institutionalize, or they end up in prison. Psychopaths, sociopaths, right? All of us have a moral compass. Now, some people would say, well, you know, morality is very much dependent on your culture or, you know, your upbringing or those kinds of things. And I would actually disagree with that, because I think when you boil it down, there are certain things that everybody just knows are wrong. There are certain things that everybody knows are wrong. You know, you could use the extreme examples But they get the point across, you know, throwing a baby off a bridge is wrong. Everybody's going to agree on that, except for people who, you know, deserve, or who culture says are going to be institutionalized because they're sociopaths or psychopaths. Everybody is going to agree that there are certain things that are wrong. You look at the Holocaust. You look at how the Jews were treated in World War II in concentration camps, and others who were put in concentration camps. Pretty much across the board, everybody's going, yeah, that wasn't okay. Because there is a moral law that exists in us. And the thing is that we know societally that a law doesn't exist unless there is a body that gives law. Okay, and I hope you're tracking with me. It's not just something that exists in thin air. Somebody put a moral law into action. There is good and wrong. And so a moral law is going to speak to a moral law giver. I think it's interesting if you watch a guy named Ravi Zacharias, he'll kind of pull on this quite often, but you'll find people who will say, you know, if evil exists, God can't exist. Because those two things are not mutually exclusive. And I actually preached, or are mutually exclusive, sorry. I actually preached a sermon on that entitled Suffering, and that's on our church website. And we covered that and went into a little bit. But what Ravi Zacharias will do is say, you know, you're saying that God and evil can't coexist. You're admitting that there's evil. If there's evil, there's good. In that case, there has to be a moral law. If there's a moral law, there has to be a moral law giver. And we come to a point where we again say, written on our own persons is proof that there is someone, at least, outside of the physical universe, I think, at work. Third proof is what we call the teleological argument. I'm not well-versed in this argument. It essentially argues that from design there must be a designer. So you look at the fine-tuning of the universe, and you're going to see that it's proof, or at least good reason to believe that there's a creator. Where there's a creation, there's a creator. If you want a good covering of that, Lee Strobel's books, The Case for Faith, The Case for a Creator, I think it is, he interviews some really, really smart people. The problem with really, really smart people is oftentimes they're difficult for you or me, an average person, to understand. They'll use kind of the technical terms. And what Lee Strobel does, and I've heard others say that he does this well, and I agree, is he breaks things down in a way where he's taking what really smart people said and he makes it very understandable, you know, for someone who isn't immersed in the world of academia. And so if you want a little bit more on those, I would recommend grabbing Lee Strobel's books. They're really good reading and really easy to read. So at this point, I'd say you've got the cosmological argument, that which begins to exist has a cause for its existence. The universe began to exist, therefore there must be a cause for its existence. You've got the axiological argument, or the moral argument, which says if there is objective right and wrong, if there's a moral law, then there has to be a moral lawgiver. And you've got the teleological argument, which says look at the fine-tuning of the universe. It's got to point to a creator. And you begin to put those things together, and you say, I think there's a pretty good case to be made that there is a God who exists. And I'm just watching as my program records, and that's 14 minutes, you know, probably 12 of which we've been taking, where we've said, here are three good reasons why I would believe that God exists. And so in a very short time span, and you can expand on these things very easily, and I mean, there are entire books written on all three of these, but you can begin to make this case where there is a reason that we believe what we believe as Christians. Now here's where we get into the rest of the discussion, is I say there's a reason we believe what we believe as Christians. Now, if you're kind of paying attention and working this through, you're going to say, yeah, but at this point, with those three arguments, Jews and Muslims could really say the same thing. I think you could rule out, Buddhism and some of the what we call pantheistic religions. And the reason I say that is it seems based off of those three arguments that there is a personal creator. And I think a lot of pantheistic or religions that believe in many gods or kind of God being in everything, panentheism, I believe, is the term for that. They just don't line up with this idea of some form of personal creator. But the question becomes, what's to say that Jews are wrong? What's to say that Muslims are wrong and Christians are right? I remember talking to a young guy, couldn't have been much older than 12 or 13, and he picked up on that right away. And I said, that's good. Like, you're using your brain. And I said, here's where I think we can set Christianity apart from the other major monotheistic or one God religions. And that's the historical life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. This is what really sets Christianity apart. Did Jesus live? Did he die? Did he rise from the dead? If he did, all of a sudden Christianity starts to become the most likely explanation for everything. So how do you know if Jesus lived, died, and rose again? Well, I'm glad you asked. Some people would say Jesus never lived. You kind of get your conspiracy theorists. I think that's going the way of the dodo. Historically, it's pretty well accepted that Jesus of Nazareth lived. It's also historically very well accepted that Jesus of Nazareth died. You could get into Lee Strobel, William Lane Craig, and a lot of others who have covered these kinds of things. I can't recommend enough, if you're kind of wanting to dig into this, the books by Lee Strobel are just really beneficial. But most historians will agree on, I think it's about five things. One is that Jesus was crucified under Pontius Pilate. Two is that Jesus was buried in the tomb of a guy named Joseph of Arimathea. The sources we have, which are the Gospels, and this is treating the Gospels not like Scripture, but just as historical sources, the way we would treat other historical sources. Jesus was buried in the tomb of a guy named Joseph of Arimathea. And then what happens is historians will agree that Jesus' tomb was found empty by a group of his women followers. And the reason that is accepted is because in first century Palestine, the word of a woman was not really counted as reliable. And I know we've come a long ways from that, but that's just the social reality that existed at the time. And so the fact that all the Gospels have Jesus' female followers finding his empty body speaks to truth, the fact that it is historical, because if you were wanting to make it up, you wouldn't have had his female disciples finding the empty tomb. You would have had his male disciples finding the empty tomb. From there, you have agreement among historians fairly widely that Jesus' disciples believed that he had risen from the dead. And the reason that you get this is when you look at the evidence, it becomes very clear that they thought he had risen from the dead, because almost across the board, all of them died for that belief. And so I don't think it's likely that you're going to have people dying for a made-up story. It just isn't going to happen. And yet we know historically that almost all of Jesus' disciples were killed for their faith. And so historians look at that and they say, they probably believed that they saw Jesus risen from the dead. And that's the other thing that historians will widely agree upon is that in that they thought they saw the risen Jesus. Now, you get a lot of historians who will admit all of those things and still don't believe Jesus rose from the dead. And the way that they'll explain it away is, they do it a couple different ways. The first is this, they'll say, listen, Jesus didn't actually die on the cross. They just thought that he was dead. Right? So that's kind of one of the popular theories. Jesus didn't actually die on the cross. People just thought he was dead. They put him in the grave, and he actually survived. And, of course, the grave or the tomb at that point wasn't like we have now where you're buried in dirt, but rather it's kind of a hewn out cave, and there was a stone put over it. there's so many problems with that. If you're going to say someone who, you know, according to what we have, was crucified, beaten, had thorns put on his head, and a spear put in his side, survived that in the first century, not only survived it, but enough to be up and walking around within a couple days, that's at least as hard to believe as Jesus having risen from the dead. It's at least as hard to believe. Another thing that you'll get is there are lots of accounts within the scriptures, and again, even if you just treat them as historical accounts of people having seen Jesus after he died. And so, historians who will say, we think that they thought that they saw Jesus have to do something with that. Some have theorized that there were group hallucinations, that the entire group saw a hallucination of Jesus at the same time. Man, I don't think that that's viable. Certainly it's not any more viable, especially given the earlier arguments that we talked about. That's not more viable than Jesus being raised from the dead if there's a God that exists. I guess what this points out is that people have to go to extreme lengths to explain away the historical documents that we have. You look at another proof, Jesus' own brothers ended up worshiping him as God. I don't know if you have any siblings. I have three. I have a brother, two brothers, and a sister. And I'm the oldest, so I guess it would kind of be the reverse. If I were to go to them and say, good news, I'm God, you can worship me, I don't think they're buying into that. So what would it take for Jesus' siblings to worship him as God, and even to, James, who became a leader in the church and was martyred, what does it take to get to that point? Maybe rising from the dead is a pretty convincing argument. I don't know if you can say it that way. So you begin to see that historically there's actually good reason to believe that Jesus rose from the dead. The only way that you could say that he didn't is if you assume that people can't rise from the dead. And to make that assumption, you again have to assume naturalism, at which point you go back to the cosmological argument, the moral argument, and the teleological argument, and say you can't just assume naturalism and then say Jesus couldn't rise from the dead. You add everything up and you begin to see we have good reason to believe that something outside of the physical universe caused that universe to exist, and Jesus rising from the dead is a giant sign pointing to who that creator is. And that's what sets Christianity apart from any other religion, from any other worldview, is the claim that Jesus lived, died, and rose from the dead. And so I know that some of this has been pretty technical, maybe even a little complicated, and I apologize for that. Again, I would recommend grab the Lee Strobel books, check out William Lane Craig's website, it's reasonablefaith.org. There are some really, really good resources available to you to dig into these things. But ultimately, what it comes down to is if you're a believer, you have good reason to believe what you believe. In the midst of Christianity really coming under a lot of scrutiny in light of modernism, in light of modern sciences, we have a good foundation to stand on. You don't need to fear that if you do a little bit of searching, man, your entire worldview is going to be cut out from under you. On the flip side, if you're listening to this and you're someone who isn't a Christian, this is something to think about. If Jesus actually died and rose from the dead, that's pretty significant. That's pretty significant for you, because he also said that he's going to come back and judge the living and the dead according to how they responded to him and his teaching. And so if Jesus died and rose from the dead, one day you're going to stand before him and have to give an answer for the life that you lived and the way that you responded to him. And that's something that you need to consider. Something to think about. So, that is going to conclude this episode. And again, you can check out our website, www.princegeorgepentecostalchurch.com. If you have any thoughts, questions, things you'd like to hear discussed, there's a form that you can fill out. And we will see you next week.